we'll open the meeting and we'll start pumping that to the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I will have before you, once you get a quorum, House File 2285, a constitutional amendment dedicating funds for natural resources and cultural heritage. And I want to thank the Chair and Committee for hearing the bill. This bill dedicates 3/8 of 1% of an increased sales tax to natural resources and cultural heritage. I've not always been a big fan of dedicated funding, but on this issue, an issue of outdoors, clean water, and habitat, I believe strongly in us having a vision for the state for the next 25 years. The breakdown is 25% for fish and wildlife, 25% protect and restore surface and groundwater, 15% for parks and trails, 15% for drinking water, 10% for cultural heritage, and then 10% for that's flexible, because I do believe in maintaining some flexibility for the legislature and appropriation. I believe the reason we're before the committee today is because all constitutional amendments make a stop. In this committee, there is a cost to the Secretary of State of about $2,000, which they can do within their budget. And with that, Madam Chair, I can answer any questions.
Okay. I guess we're going to have two constitutional amendments before us today. Representative Huntley, we don't have a quorum yet, so we might actually go through both of them if we can't start taking motions on this one. But I guess I would like the Secretary of State's office to speak a little bit about how a constitutional amendment goes on.
Madam Chair, Tom Durand, Assistant Secretary of State. I don't know if you have a copy of the fiscal note, but as Representative Sertich indicated, we have some minor costs of about $2,000 to put one constitutional amendment on the ballot, and we assume within our budgeting that we can handle that. So if you don't have a whole ton of constitutional amendments, we are in good shape. There are some relatively minor cost in each of the counties, then that would add up to another $102,000 for them to program their ballot counters and print their sample ballots. And, it just adds to the overall size and complexity of the ballot in a minor way. But there are some, minor costs to each county, so it adds up to $102,000 in our estimation.
Mr. Durand, I guess one question that I have is, if we do one constitutional amendment or many constitutional amendments, is the cost the same?
Madam Chair, the cost is essentially the same. I think that at some point, if you get too many of them, if you think of a ballot, it has a certain size. The more things you add to the ballot, at some point, you need to go to another page, which, you got incremental costs until you go to that next page, and then it, bumps up. So it's really, from county to county, hard for us to estimate what is going to happen. So we assume that it's going to cost a little more in one county, a little less in another county, and on average, this is about what it costs.
One other question, there's been, folklore or whatever, that the efficacy of passing a constitutional amendment diminishes as you put more constitutional amendments on the ballot. Is there any data on that? Or obviously, we're looking at various people have proposed different constitutional amendments. Is there any data on that over the years, or could you, within the course of the next year, before we do our final decision on all constitutional ballots, get that to us?
Madam
Chair, the question is if we have four constitutional ballots, do they all fail, or do they all pass, or do they are they rotated also on the ballot? Do they appear in the same order?
Madam Chair, they appear in the same order. My memory is maybe 20 years ago we had a bunch. Seems to me, and so we could maybe go back and look at that, but I can't tell you that there's been any ongoing analysis of what the impact is of having multiple ones. We don't really get into that aspect of it. It's not something that we would be interested in normally, but I could take a look and see if there's any information we could provide to you to make your own conclusion.
Okay, before we have, I guess I would like that, by the way. Right. I'd like some information on what happens, and what determines the order, the order in which they're passed.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay, and, I'm interested in that information. What effect the numbers have on the ballots, and what effect the order has on the ballot, and obviously it's very subjective. It would depend on which, on probably, I would hope it would be more dependent on the content than on either of those two factors.
Madam Chair, and be glad to get you the information. I'm not sure we can provide any analysis that
sure.
would be useful. There's so many subjective issues that would be involved.
Okay. Good. We're still one short of a quorum. I know that there are some amendments. The members want to discuss the amendments. Or do you want to wait until the full quorum comes, or do you, of course, we can go on to a description of Representative Huntley's bill. What, for people who have amendments, what's their preference? Question?
Madam Chair, first of you mentioned that there's a couple of constitutional amendments that we're hearing today. I see Representative Huntley and Representative Surge, but there's also a couple of constitutional amendments that we're not hearing today that have been introduced. I have one myself on the marriage amendment. Can you tell me, Madam Chair, how you made the decision to hear these two and not mine or Representative Severson's constitutional amendment on the marriage?
Well, Representative Swigum, these amendments came, this is the last, next to the last stop in the process, and the others came through. I didn't pull up any constitutional amendments and said I wanted to hear them.
So it was a previous decision by a previous chair, Madam Chair.
Yes. And my favorite one isn't here at all. That's why I was asking about the order, and that's the elimination of Lieutenant Governor. And that, I think, only has one committee before that, and I haven't asked. I asked for a hearing, but I haven't pressed for a hearing because we don't. I've always felt, the exception I think I have is for Representative Sertich's one, which I think will need a lot of work on it. I've always felt that we have an awful lot to do this year with the hearing of budgets, and I'd rather let constitutional amendments wait for the next year. But people other than me have made the decision about moving these forward ahead, so that's the reason they're here today. But I assure you, it's no decision on my part.
Madam Chair, I appreciate that explanation. I'm very disappointed that my constitutional amendment is not here, and one that I think would strongly pass the House of Representatives. When you say other people, I'm not sure who those other people are, but if those other people are in this room, Majority Leader Sertich, I am very, very disappointed that you chose to direct people not to hear the marriage amendment that I think should be here with these other two and put on the ballot. Mr. Sertich, maybe to your constitutional amendment before us right now, it was patterned, I believe, after a constitutional amendment in Missouri. At least that's what I was told when I signed on the bill in past years. Can you tell me a little bit how the Missouri constitutional amendment might differ from the one you have before us here?
Madam Chair, Representative Swigum, first and foremost, I don't direct the chairs to do anything.
Sure.
And so that was their own decision. And,
Madam Chair, excuse me.
Thank you. Representative Swigum, this, I believe the original proposal 9 years ago may have been patterned after Missouri. Now the one before us is something that many members have worked together on to develop something that's building the broadest coalition to get the amendment passed. Members, it's been discussed for over 9 years trying to get this on the ballot, and it's been unsuccessful. We're hopeful this year that we're not only successful in getting it on the ballot, but getting the constitutional amendment passed, and we believe that this provides some flexibility, for legislative oversight, for them to be able to spend the funds while still dedicating them to the long-term vision of preserving natural resources and cultural heritage.
Madam Chair, Madam Chair, Representative Sertich, much to I guess the opposite thought of what you have, and out of full respect to your philosophy and what you think will happen, I believe that the broadening of this amendment and the enhancing of it will assure its defeat, not its passage, amongst the citizens of Minnesota. As this amendment has broadened to include so many special interests, and we all understand the politics thereof, Representative Sertich, as it's been broadened to include those special interests, as it's been increased in its size, I think as introduced by former Senator Lessard and former House Member Holston 7 years ago, it was a 1/8 limitation, if I remember correctly. Now it's 3/8 of an increase as it's been broadened to include all these interests, as it's been enhanced in its size. By the way, Missouri, I think, is 1/10 of 1%, not 3/8 of a percent, and they have a sales tax of about half of what Minnesota's is, maybe a little more than half. I think you're assuring the defeat of the amendment amongst the citizens of Minnesota. Certainly, your citizens are pretty smart people. They're pretty smart voters. They understand what's going on. They can understand and they can see the interest in the politics being played. And unfortunately, I would tell you that the citizens are going to get it right if this is the amendment with this wordage and with this size before them in 2008. They're going to get it right, and it will be a defeat of the amendment.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a little more hopeful than you on that, I guess. And what I can say about amendments that have been proposed in the past is they haven't got through the legislative process, and that's unfortunate, but we're trying to be hopeful and move something forward that works. And I know a lot of folks are excited in all these areas about the possibility and the hope that we can get this on the ballot and get it passed.
Okay, we do have a quorum now, so I'll call the... Okay, we'll call the committee to order. And there are two amendments that are present before us. There's a, first of all, committee's called to order, and I'll move that House File 2285 be recommended to pass. I guess it just gets I'm not sure what our motions are. It gets transferred to finance, referred to finance. And there are two amendments. There's an amendment by Representative De La Forest and a representative, and an amendment by Representative Zellers. In which order would you like to take them?
Madam Chair, I would move the 0971 amendment.
Okay. Representative De La Forest moves the 0971 amendment. Would you like to explain the amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair and members. And
you have a copy, I assume.
Representative, I believe the amendment's been distributed the packet, so I think everybody's got one. This is definitely an issue near and dear to my heart after 30-plus years of hunting. And like Representative Swiggum, who I think has articulated the concerns quite well, and having been on the conference committee last year that dealt with this issue, my amendment would delete funding for the arts and eliminate that dedicated fund for the simple reason. I believe, first and foremost, I would admit that constitutionally dedicating funds isn't the best public policy. It's really a poor way to fund governmental programs. But I've become convinced that this type of dedicated funding is necessary and important for our natural resources. It's indisputable, I think, that Minnesota has degraded over the years our wetlands and natural resources and the like, and is in a state of crisis, no doubt about it. Fortunately, that's not the case for the arts. We've talked to the advocates. The arts are in wonderful shape. Certainly, they could be better. Everything could be. But our natural resources are in a state of crisis. Our arts and cultural heritage is not. That's the difference. Dedicated funding, in my mind, is necessary to help our natural resources, is not necessary for the arts. Madam Speaker, I ask for roll call vote on this amendment. It's that important to me.
Okay, roll call vote having been requested. Representative Sirich, you want to respond?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I encourage a no vote. Members, as I said before, we can talk about what's happened in the past, but how the amendment has been worded in the past has not worked, has not gotten the ballot, I believe, in building the most broad coalition possible for passage, not just out of the legislature, but on the ballot. Other states actually have dedicated funding. Indiana comes to mind for architectural historic preservation. Culture would be a part of that as well. So, members, I'd encourage a vote.
Okay. Any other comments?
Madam Chair.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for the Representative Sirich, would you agree with my observation that our natural resources are in a state of crisis in many respects, especially our wetlands, but the arts are not?
Representative Sirich.
Madam Chair, Representative De La Forest, we heard some very compelling testimony in the Heritage Committee yesterday about the importance and needs in public broadcasting and in the arts and in historical preservation that would help with passing this amendment and for funding in those areas. So I believe it's important to maintain that as a piece of this constitutional amendment.
You know, Representative De La Forest, I kind of agree with you about not doing these kinds of, I don't like dedicated funds, and I particularly don't like dedicating them in the Constitution. But, and one of the reasons I don't like them is probably different than the reason that you do, is that you often find, as we're looking at what's happening with our transportation issues, when people see a dedicated fund, they think that the issue is totally taken care of, and they think that there's no need for any more concern about it. So I actually think that to protect the natural resources from the negative effects of having a dedicated fund, which we know isn't enough, the tiny proportion of this compared to the proportion of the state budget, it's just like a little icing, and I think we're better off broadening it just so that it has some company besides who will say that dedicated funds aren't enough. We can't just reduce it. So I think we agree on some of the fundamentals. We may have different problems about what the negative effects of dedicated funds on even the subject you're dedicating them to.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't disagree with you. I fully agree with you. That's absolutely right. If this were to pass, you're right. There's a fear that voters and legislators will be reluctant to do anything else with respect to natural resources. Like you say, the idea is, well, we took care of this already at the ballot box. You're absolutely right.
So that's why I think it's better to put more things in that bad boat.
We may part company on that matter, Jared. I would agree with Representative Swigum. I think there's a very real danger that the inclusion of more may not create a broad-based coalition. Representative Zellers and I know many in the caster and blaster communities, and a lot of them and some of these groups are opposed to including folks in the coalition. So, I'm not convinced that we're creating a broader coalition or ensuring passage by including more and more folks.
Well, I know a lot of people in the painting and poetry community, and they're ready to go out and work for the passage of this. So we'll see if your negative friends exceed my positive friends. Anyway, we have, is there anyone else want to say anything on this amendment? Okay, we have the 0971 amendment before us, and clerk will take the roll.
Kahn?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Bigham?
No.
De La Forest?
Yes.
Hilty?
No.
Portman?
No.
Lesh?
No.
Pepin? Poppy?
No.
Spigham?
Yes.
Ward?
No.
Winkler?
No.
Zellers?
Yes.
Okay, the amendment fails. Four yeses and eight noes. Okay, we now have the Zellers amendment before us. Representative Zellers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll offer the A070969 amendment. And as Representative De La Forest said,
he and I, being of the caster and blaster background, I think actually in 03 was the first time that I actually signed on to this amendment and had started working on behalf of outdoorsmen, not just necessarily hunters and fisher men and women, but also those who enjoy the natural resources, parks, trails, just being outdoors. It's not all about hunting, it's sometimes just being outdoors. And Madam Chair and members, I think it's ironic that we're taking another vote on this the day before the fishing opener. And, you know, and under Representative Sturdich's proposal, we only have 25% going to the Clean Water Fund and 25% to the Natural Heritage Fund. So of the original proposal, I think that, you know, all of the funding was going to go to the outdoors. And this one, we're only going to get half the amount. And what my amendment does, Madam Chair and members, is it takes it back down to the original proposal, which is for the outdoors out of the current sales tax. Sportsmen hunters have always said that they don't want to add on to it. We're already paying our fair share with the number of things that we buy. You know, I last night on the way home, I made a spin by Cabela's just to see. It's about 3 miles from my house. My wife still is a little disappointed about their placement of a big place like that. But just to see what was going on out there, and as you can imagine, the parking lot was absolutely packed. Now, those are sales taxes that people are spending here in our state, from our state, who are coming into our state, who are, you know, being part of the tourism boom that we're going to see this weekend. And, you know, to not only fulfill that commitment, I think, that we're making to the natural resources when we go out there, but as a matter of tourism, this is something that we're actually, you know, deriving a great benefit from for our state. And, you know, being not quite the tax committee purist as some of the senior members on that committee, I do agree that the dedicating of funds is, you know, it's not exactly the best policy in the world. But in this case, we've been waiting for years and years and years. And I think, Madam Chair, if we're ever going to get to that point, we're going to have to do it this way. And so, Madam Chair, members, this takes it back. It's a fourth of the current, 1/4 of 1% of the current sales tax. It takes it back to 50% for natural resources, enhanced fishing wildlife habitat, and then 50% the environmental fund for clean water legacy, Texas states, lakes, river streams, wetlands, and groundwater. So, okay. Madam Chair, members, I ask for your support, and I asked to have roll call too, Madam Chair.
Okay. Roll call being requested. Representative Zellis has moved this amendment. Representative Sertich.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'd ask you to vote no. Representative Zellers, I'd also draw your attention to the new wrinkle in this. Is the 10% that's flexible for any of the above purposes, which I think helps address some concerns for members who are a little more queasy about dedicated funding. So within the next 25 years that this is dedicated, that money can be used as need may be in areas. So that easily and may go towards the fish wildlife or protecting the water. Members, going backwards is not helpful. There's a reason I believe that the original amendments didn't pass. We need new resources in these areas and protecting our water and our habitat. And if we're not just talking about passing the legislature but actually passing on the ballot, I would hate for the campaign against this to say don't vote for it because it's going to cut out of our schools, our nursing homes, and those sorts of issues. So for that reason, I'd ask members to vote no.
Okay, I agree with Representative Sertich's analysis. Since he said most of what I was going to say, I won't have to repeat it. I'll just add, though, besides being the day before fishing opener, today is the 149th birthday of the state, so I think the cultural heritage part should get a little acknowledgement in this.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you. And Representative Sertich, I do appreciate that 10%, but I say this with all, you know, due respect. If it's not in there when it leaves here, I have very, 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 very strong reservations that it'll actually be put towards direct resources. No offense to Representative DeForest and I, but the number of casters and blasters down here at the Capitol is dwindling every day. And if you're not one of us, you're probably not going to vote that way when it comes to the floor amendment or comes to the funding. And I just think if we're going to send it out of here the way it should be, the way it has been in the past, the way that the folks who we are members of, Pheasants Forever, Ducks Unlimited, you know, whatever it may be, those folks have been working on this issue for years and years, and that's the way it started. and only in recent history when I think we did actually get close to passage did our friends in the arts and cultural community decide to kind of glom on to the success that these folks have built on for, at least in my estimation, 4 or 5 years now. So I do appreciate that 10% fungibility, but I'd rather have it going straight as we get out of here.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Zellers, as a member of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, close home counts and horseshoes and hand grenades, the funding they've received dedicated thus far from all the amendments coming forward is zero because it hasn't passed. So we're looking for a broad coalition. We're looking to actually get them the resources this year.
Okay. Representative Wolfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Sergis, with respect to the tax increase, you know, we're talking about a sales tax increase here, and if you take, for example, the folks who live in Minneapolis, I mean, they're paying already the food and beverage tax, they're paying for a baseball stadium. Representative Hortman is successful. There could be the possibility of paying yet another increased sales tax for transportation out there. Now we're talking about the possibility of yet another sales tax larded on top of that for this purpose. And, you know, in tax committee, we've had a variety of discussions about the regressive nature of the sales tax. And I know that the regressive structure of Minnesota's tax system has been an issue of concern to this House's leadership, to you and Speaker Kelleher. So not only do I have a concern about voters being a bit leery about putting a sales tax increase on top of the other ones that we've had recently, you know, I've got a concern again about the regressive nature of this, that you know, you may have folks in Minneapolis, again, they may never go to a ball game, they may not hunt, they may not fish, heck, they may not even be able to afford to go out to eat and go to bars and restaurants, yet they would pay all of these taxes if successful. And are you concerned about that at all?
Representative Sears.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn, Representative De La Forest, you'll have an opportunity to make our tax system more progressive later today on a small Representative Dill bill on a county hospital levy. And so hopefully you'll join me on the board there making our tax system more progressive. Members, it does concern me that sales tax is regressive, but this, as Representative Schlegel said in the past, the voters are smart. If they want this, they'll vote for it, and it'll be up to them.
Representative Horton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I share Representative De La Forest's concern, and I have a bill in the hopper to change the sales tax to 4.5% and apply it more broadly. Clothing is the least regressive category to apply the sales tax to, and I'd be happy to have you on that bill as a co-author. I know Representative Lincheski is looking at a 4 to 6 year process of reforming the sales tax in Minnesota and lowering the rate, which we really need to do, but I had hoped it was something we could do in this session, but my understanding is that we just don't have the time to reform the entire sales tax in this session, but that it's a project that Representative Lincheski will be working on.
And I'll also add that one of my most progressive proposals for the sales tax, to add it to elective cosmetic surgery, didn't go anywhere this year, so and had a lot of negative comments. And I noticed that no one here jumped on to be a co-author of it.
Madam Chair, you did get pummeled on that one. Representative Wortman, I think that your idea to broaden the sales tax is certainly worthy of debate. I'm disappointed that Representative Lincheski didn't give us an opportunity to fully debate and vote on that particular bill.
Next year. Well, next year I'm going to give the cosmetic sales tax to someone like Zellers, De La Forest, and Hortman, so that you don't have to get comments like, why is someone who needs cosmetic surgery so badly paying this bill? But anyway, we are going a little far. Zellers amendment.
Madam Chair?
Representative Sergis.
Madam Chair, thank you. Three times, Mr. Sergis, you have mentioned the failure of the passage of the bill in past years. I have been particularly noting of those comments that have kind of passed over. I just want you to know, sir, that the failure for the passage of the bill in past years, specifically and directly, at least in the last year, lies on a former majority leader, Democrat of the Senate, who is no longer with us, whose response was no. Not any more than that. Just plain no. That would have been a failure, certainly, for it not being on the ballot in 2006, Representative Sertich. To the issue, and this is probably going to be more for the tax committee. Has this bill gone to the tax committee yet, Representative Sertich?
Our only job is to get it to
Representative Kahn, Representative Swigum, not yet, but it's on its way there. Hopefully, if it keeps going through the process. And Representative Swigum, I just made note of the bill in the past. If you want to assess blame, I don't know if that's helpful or not. I'm looking at moving this forward.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'm not finished. I apologize. But probably more for tax committee, but I was interested in what Representative DeLaForest brought up in regards to what we are tacking on the burdens of taxpayers of the state and the sales tax. Now, let me see if I have this correct and add to the list. The sales tax in Minnesota is 6.5%, which is, I assume, one amongst the highest in the country. I assume that Minneapolis has an additional 0.5% sales tax. I assume that with the baseball park passing last year, it's an additional 0.015%. I think Minneapolis also has a lodging motel tax. Would that be correct, Representative DeLaForest?
I think so.
And now this, and then the 0.5-cent sales tax is being proposed in the transportation bill, the one Representative Hortman is carrying. And now another 3/8 on this bill.
That's right.
Start adding it up, folks. Let's see. I can't even add it up. Half, 3/8, 0.015. Lodging tax. I don't know what the lodging tax is, but I'll find out. The 6.5. Citizens are not going to do it, folks.
Okay.
Well,
very
honestly.
As the only Minneapolis resident sitting around at this table right now, I will tell you that my constituent complaints deal almost entirely with the property tax. Property tax, they're able to adjust these kind of really tweakings of the sales tax by just the amount of things that they purchase, as long as it's not on food and also on clothing. There's a question of whether it's regressive on clothing or not. I guess if you're dealing with a little baby, a tax could seem pretty regressive if it was on clothing. If you're dealing with retired people, it doesn't seem quite so regressive. But my complaints, I assure you, if you're concerned about my constituents, come entirely about the sales tax. So, Representative...
The sales
tax. Property tax, sorry.
Sometimes we say what we mean.
not before 9 in the morning. Representative Zeller.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And to maybe wrap this back up to the actual amendment that we're on. Again, this is taking us back to the original proposal. I think that former Speaker Meredith Swigum has a great point. I think every year that I've been here, we've either voted on, or at least every other year, we've voted on this, and it has passed the House. And it has passed with a bipartisan support. I think Representative Sertich has voted with us on the...
No.
Maybe not. And now he's got the religion. It's amazing. He is not an author now. But this is what we've been working for a number of years. I actually was looking for the bumper sticker I had past the 3/16, which we got the first year we started working on this. I couldn't find it. But this is going back to what, and again, the sportsmen, women, hunters, fishermen have said, we're already paying this tax. We're paying sales tax when we buy a fishing rod. And, you know, Madam Chair, if you haven't been out there, some of these fishing rods that I'm not allowed to buy go upwards of $300, $400, $500, $600 for one little stick of fishing rod. That doesn't include the reel to fish in. So you can imagine the sales tax on some of these things. So this is what the folks that we've supported, who have been pushing this for a number of years, are saying. We're already paying these sales taxes. We want it to go to what we're actually paying it on: hunting, fishing, being outdoors. I appreciate your vote.
Well, I appreciate being able to, along with Representative Sertich, to vote for this bill for the first time. So, never managed to get my support when I went.
You always could have voted for it in the past.
Okay, any other comments? Okay, the clerk will take the roll on the Zeller's Amendment.
Kahn?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Bigham?
No.
DeLaForest?
Yes.
Hilty?
No.
Portman?
No.
Lesh?
No.
Pepin? Pocky?
No.
Spigum?
Yes.
Ward?
No.
Winkler?
No.
Zellers?
Aye.
There being
4 ayes and 8 nays, the amendment is defeated. Okay, if nothing else, we now have the bill as not amended before us. Any further discussion on the bill? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Sertich, considering that you still have a stop in taxes, it's got to go through the pass-through committee of finance, and we are a week and a couple of days from adjournment, you know, why so long? And I know that you're a busy guy, but maybe you shouldn't have been the one to carry this bill. And I know that I have constituents that are very frustrated. I happen to live down the street from a gun club, and my guys are saying, what's the holdup? And they're frustrated because you've loaded it up with, as Representative Swiggin pointed out, things that are going to make this thing fail. And I guess I want to believe that you have the best interests in mind when it comes to this legislation, but your actions, you know, speak of another alternative, of a different motivation there. And I guess I just want to say I'm very frustrated that it has taken until this time, we're past committee deadlines, for having a special hearing just for this bill when we could have done this back in February or March or even January. It's not like this is a new issue, and yet we're here today in May discussing this issue. It's just ridiculous. And I hope that you can make it through all those hoops and that we can get a chance to vote on something that's actually going to pass. And I guess I just had to express my frustration. So,
Representative Anderson, it's your first year here, so you've never had an end of the session week. And I assure you, a lot more gets done in the last week of the session than in the first week of the session. Representative Sertich.
Thank you, President Pan, but Representative Anderson, I know you've been around this place, too, to know well enough that many big things happen within a matter of days around the Capitol. First and foremost, we need to pass our budget here this year. This will not be on the ballot till 2008, though I know many of the groups are interested in fundraising, and hopefully we can get this passed before the end of this session so they can fundraise. So I believe in getting it done, and done well than it languishing as it has over the last few years. As your points to me being a busy guy, I guess so, but what's really important is if it gets done, it's scheduled for a hearing. Hopefully if it passes here within the next hour in the Finance Committee, and I have the assurances and hope that Ways and Means will be taking it up early next week, and I've already been speaking with the author in the Senate that they have a hearing on the floor today that we can get this wrapped up in the next 7 days.
Representative Ames.
In taxes?
Madam Chair, as I answered with President Swiggin as well, the Tax Committee will be hearing this before it goes to Ways and Means.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. We now have the motion to pass on to Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Okay. We now have one more constitutional amendment before us. Representative Huntley. Universal health care. Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair, House File 683 is...
I'll move House File 683.
Senator Berglund has this, Madam Chair, in the Senate, and it's a relatively two-sentence constitutional amendment. Every Minnesota resident has the right to health care. It is the responsibility of the governor and the legislature to implement all necessary legislation to ensure affordable health care. The purpose of this constitutional amendment is to have the public of the state basically encourage the governor and the legislature to finish the work that's already been started. Minnesota has right now about a little over 7% uninsured. We used to be down to a little less than 5%. We do lead the nation in having the lowest number of uninsured. We're very close to having a system that will take care of everyone. And this constitutional amendment simply asks the governor and legislature to finish the job. I know the governor is very interested in probably not this amendment, but very interested in changing the healthcare system so that it's more affordable to everyone, and I think this constitutional amendment would push us towards that completion. I know yesterday the Pew Research Fund came out with a report that showed more than 70% of the public nationally support universal coverage and are even willing to raise their taxes a little bit to pay for that. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Freedom, De La Forest, Sue. Representative
If I were to believe everything I've heard about what the citizens are willing to raise their taxes for this year, you would take every penny the citizens in my district make. Representative Huntley, to your bill that's before us, I'd like to have a little more definition, a little more meat on the bones, if I could. Tell me exactly what this passage of the constitutional amendment means in regards to what will we enact? What are we going to pass? What is the price tag to the taxpayers of what we are going to pass? Rather than just these words about coverage and right to health care, tell me what it means from a meat and bones specific action.
Representative
Hunt. Well, Madam Chair and Representative Swigum, this is very general the way it's written. I agree with that. However, there are things we can do in this state that will reduce the cost of health care to everyone and improve quality if the state as a whole gets moving in the right direction. That is not just the government. The private sector, the health care delivery system needs to change. It's quite clear from all the evidence that we have nationally and locally that we can save tremendous amounts of money, certainly more than 20%. Of what's being spent now is not being spent in ways that in things that need to be spent. We had hearings in my committee and several other committees, for instance, a very strong debate over high-end imaging. That's CAT scans, MRIs, those kinds of things. And everybody agrees, both sides of the issue, that 15% of the those procedures that are ordered are not necessary and do not result in any improvement in anybody's health. The question is, how do you stop waste, things like that? And that's not just public programs, it's all programs. I believe that if the governor and the legislature and the private sector sit down this summer, in fall and early winter, they can come up with a plan that will get those savings out of the system. And if we can save everybody 20%, that's more than enough to take care of the 7% that don't have insurance currently.
Madam Chair, Representative Huntley, and you are a very wise individual, but with all due respect, you've been trying to do that since you've been here for 14 years or 16 years, whatever it is, and I've heard it for the 28 years I've been here in the legislature about reform, bringing control to the health care costs, reforming the system. And we do tinker and move and reform each and every year, but the fact of the matter is I see one of three things taking place. Now, maybe you don't want to speak about these. Maybe you don't want to tell the citizens what's going to take place. But either there's going to be price controls, which historically have never worked in any situation, in any market, price controls in healthcare, or we're going to do the full Monty of the single-payer system with the quotas and the mediocrity that comes with it, or you're going to significantly increase cost of the taxpayer and significantly increase state programs of health care, which, by the way, you know right now in your own bill that you're carrying has significant tails already that we can't afford that are unsustainable into the next year. So I'd just like to know what we're buying with these words. I'd like to put some meat on the bones. I'd like you to tell me, Steve, this is what it means and this is what I'm going to do. And I think you owe it to the citizens. I think you owe it to the members of this body, Representative Huntley, who would give us your specific plan of what
right to health care does, or forget the constitutional amendment and do it right now. If you know what it means, if you know what it's about, do it right now. You've got the ability. You're the chair. You've got the gavel. You've got the power. It's been wielded upon us all session. Just go do it.
Okay. Let me, before we get this answer, which everyone in the state is waiting for, we have four sets of minutes to be approved.
Chair, there's a correction on the March 26 minutes. Rebecca Otto's our state auditor on the, not secretary,
okay,
under the 1309 Hills.
Thank you. Okay.
So with that, and I apologize for interrupting.
No, no, that's just what we need. Okay, with that correction, Representative Zellers still moves the adoption of the four sets of minutes that are before us. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, now Representative Huntley and then Representative Lesh, and then I have a comment and then we're going to vote. Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair and Representative Swigum,
we do have remind members as a committee coming in here to follow up the point that Representative Anderson made, committee coming in here at 9 o'clock, and so we did promise we'd get out by then. So,
Madam Chair and Representative Swigum, this side of the bicameral legislature did not support premium caps, which was the Senate's attempt to control prices. That's currently out of the bill. I have spent probably 14 years working on that 7% that don't have any insurance, and it's dawned on me in the last 6 or 7 months that we're never going to fix that problem unless we fix the problem for the 93% that have insurance. And what we need to do is completely transform the healthcare system and start paying providers for doing the right things instead of just a current system. We pay them for procedures, we pay them for office visits, we pay them for x-rays. We don't pay them directly for improving people's health. And in fact, we have disincentives in our current payment system for them to do what needs to be done to control costs. And the way you're going to save money in the healthcare system is proper integration of care for people that have chronic illnesses. The big bucks are spent on people that are already sick. And if you want to save money, you have to take people that are, for instance, already have hypertension and keep that hypertension from getting worse. The payment system today rewards you for not doing that, letting them get worse, and then make a lot of money when they need drastic interventions. And in fact, there's no way that we're quite clear that nurses are the people that are going to be integrating that care for people that have chronic illnesses. And we have no way in our current payment system to pay nurses to do that. If we pay for office visits, and if we change the payment structure of health care, then we can get the results we want and we can save money. But in order to do that, we need the government and the private sector working together to completely change the payment system in the health care delivery system.
Representative.
Madam Chair, Representative Honey, it sounds like big government control. It sounds like big government making the decisions. I think we've already done the best practices. I think you and Representative Bradley carried that together 3 or 4 years ago. Representative Honey, I'm concerned about the consequences of significance to this bill and what it means to our wonderful health care system in this country. I mean, people vote with their feet. They come to the United States of America for their health care. You know, by golly, we don't go to Australia or wherever for health care. People come here. So there's something good about the system. Now, and it just rankles me that if you know what to do, and with these good words, you know what to do, you got the gavel. Do it. Why aren't you doing it?
Well, I think he's starting to find you. Representative Lesh.
Thank you. Speaker Emeritus Swingham, I haven't been around here as long as you have, and I haven't been involved in paying attention to public policy nearly as long, but when I did start, I was around probably high school, and I remember the same argument that if we do this kind of thing, it was the discussion of nationalizing health care, and we'd have quotas and price controls, and I've been trying to pay attention to that, and it may have had merit back then, I don't know, because I didn't know the system that well, but now we already have that. We have price controls and quotas It's just done by big HMOs instead of government. And I, for one, would rather have people who respond to me at the ballot box making those decisions than people who don't respond to me and aren't accountable to me. And we, I think in Minnesota, it was the 70s where we made healthcare nonprofit, you know, hospitals, so that, you know, we thought, well, prices wouldn't spike. Who was the highest paid CEO in Minnesota last year? The head of an HMO, who incidentally just stole $1.6 billion from the citizens. And we stand around saying, where are the healthcare dollars going? Well, most westernized democracies spend about 6% of their GDP on healthcare. We spend 12%. So that money is going somewhere. And I say, you know, these people that are flocking to the United States to get health care, it's the wealthy people that are flocking to get health care. Poor people aren't flocking to the United States to get health care. The money is going somewhere. I, Speaker Emeritus Figham, do not think it can get much worse. I think this is a bold and innovative initiative, and I fully support it.
Okay, well, Ms. Madam Chair, and I understand, Representative Lester, I appreciate where you come from. What does it mean? Tell me, what are you, with these words that pass on the ballot, 2008, what does it mean? Tell me what you are going to do to respond to that. Give me the meat and bones.
I'm going to interject and say, first of all, because I'm getting dirty looks from the chair of the next committee, as much as he's capable of giving a dirty look, because he's a very nice person. But, I actually put in a bill that was very similar to this. I've looked at the wording that I had proposed on the ballot, and it's almost identical. And I, instead of going forward, I had a very simple philosophy behind mine, which I picked up from a person who's a former governor and doctor in the state of Oregon, which is that the philosophy we ought to use is the philosophy that has worked us very well across the country at both the federal and the state level, which is that every child has the constitutional right to an equitable education. And we all agree with that. Every state just about agrees with it, and the federal government agrees with it. We've had a whole set of court cases implementing it, so we know what it means. You know, it may not be perfect, and we know it's not perfect even in our own state. But at least it's a philosophy. I saw you nodding, so it's a philosophy I think you agree on. What happens? Now, we don't, as we've had discussions, we don't always fund education to the extent that we should, but so we make bad decisions that we might consider bad decisions. We cut back on programs, we increase class size, but we never say what we're saying in healthcare now, which is one set of people gets it and another set of people doesn't get it. And since we do have, and so what this bill, the amendment does, is just say we're going to follow what we've done with education. The other problem that we have in this country is that we don't, like in other countries, let people die on the streets. So what happens is that when someone finally gets sick enough, they end up in the emergency rooms, usually in the emergency room of my county or in this county, which are the big ones, where they then get health care at the most expensive rate possible at any level of the system. So I think Representative Huntley's on the right track, and I think we ought to pass this bill and let Representative Carlson have his
say. With all due respect, nice words, but if we're going to do this equity thing in education where the students in Representative
Ward
in my district get $4,500 and $5,000 less than the students in your district, I want no part of it, okay? If you talk about equity in education, you shouldn't have gone there, Representative Kahn, because there is no equity. There is no. I think the Constitution talks about uniform education. The word is uniform.
Right.
It's not there, and you know it, and I know it. There's a little power twist to underfund the students in Representative Ward's district and overfund them in your district in a uniform way. But you still haven't answered my question. Neither you nor Representative Lesh nor the author of the bill has answered my question. Put the meat on the bones. Tell me what this means, what the passage of it means.
Okay.
And give me the bill. Tell me what it's going to look like. Tell me what it means to you. And if so, do it now.
Well, Representative Figham, just read the amendment. It says it's the responsibility of the governor and the legislature.
I want
to
know the bill, the program, the spending. What's the cost? That's what I want to know.
You know, Senator Blatt.
Thank you.
And then we're going to vote.
We're proposing, Madam Chair and Representative Spigen, we're proposing a constitutional amendment. And when the founding fathers gathered to discuss the Constitution, I'm sure they had plenty of discussions about what did this mean, the Bill of Rights, First Amendment, Second Amendment, what does it mean to be free from search and seizure? The same kind of debate would be we would have here. But they made their decisions and their arguments based on past history, how they dealt with a foreign occupying power, how they dealt with police powers. Similarly, we deal with this here today and how we've dealt with our health care system. So I think the answer to your question is what does that mean? It means not having the burdensome health care situation that we have in Minnesota today. We will develop the details on that as we go, just as the founding fathers did. But as of now, I think it means not having the system we have right now.
Well, Madam Chair, the founding fathers actually had the guts to take a vote, too. They didn't put it on a ballot and say, here, go ahead and vote on it, and then we'll figure it out once we get there.
Well, I don't think we're going to get into a discussion of how we pass constitutional amendments and how we should. We have House File 683 before us to go on to the Finance Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion passes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you very much, committee members. This may very well be our last meeting of this year.
Thankfully.
Who knows? Okay.
Any luck at all.
Okay. Meeting adjourned.